And I don't know if anybody said thank you to you today, but if they didn't, I'll just make the turn. I'm Andy Griffith and just say much obliged. No one said it today, I'll say thank you. That's why it's easy to bring up the man who oversees what this conference is about. He is the national president. I'm just so proud. He's from my hometown as well. Would you please welcome the national president of Noble, Mr. Joseph McMillan.
Second, let me express my sincere thanks to your regional vice president, Mr. Andre Anderson, for the outstanding work which he is doing in representing this region. To Noble's first vice president, Deputy Chief Ernest Green, who in a few short months,
thank you, Jesus,
will be taking up the charge of leading our great organization. To the Bay Area chapter president and to members of all that you have done to make this training endeavor and awards dinner such success, and to the various award recipients that are being recognized tonight. It is my pleasure being here representing the close to 3,000 members of our great organization. For a few minutes, indulge me as you're having a salad, and what a great topic for us to focus on. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. In preparing for my remarks, I was drawn to these words by the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who wrote them in his infamous letter from Birmingham City Jail. In writing this famed letter, Dr. King took an introspective look at the role of the clergy was playing in failing to be vocal on issues in their communities and challenged them virtually to step up to the plate and speak out against those that were engaging in racial bias against Black Americans. Similarly, I suggest that as law enforcement professionals, we too have a sworn duty to protect against injustice and challenge those amongst us that are tarnishing this sheep that we were to cease and desist. As an organization, Noble has a unique voice in addressing issues that impact the community, and it is from this perspective that I'll be speaking for a few moments today. That said, there are several recent incidents where some of our colleagues have acted in ways that is in direct contradiction of that sworn duty. Over the past few years, incidents of excessive force have been increasingly prevalent. With advancements in modern technology, the internet, and 24-hour news cycles, which has changed the way the public receives information. What previously may have been an incident that remained in internal affairs is now immediately part of the public record. In just the past 6 months, there have been several troubling incidents in the news. In Florida, a 22-year-old man was punched in the face by officers during an incident at a bank this past December. In February of this year, video surfaced of a homeless man in Fresno being punched in the face while being taken into custody. In Michigan last month, a Grand Valley State University student was shot at his off-campus apartment as his off-campus apartment was searched. He was unarmed. Also last month, video of a man being arrested in Kansas in his own driveway was circulated. The video showed officers holding down and kicking the man. And two of the highest profile incidents happened here in California. We know on New Year's Day the video was widely circulated from a Bar police officer shooting Oscar Grant on a station platform. Grant was unarmed and already subdued by officers. Video of this incident have had more than a million views on YouTube. And in October 2008, Julian Alexander was shot at his home in Anaheim when he went outside to investigate a strange noise. These incidents underscore a disturbing trend. Unfortunately, the actions of a few have a drastic impact on all of law enforcement. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. As an organization, Noble roundly condemns the use of excessive force and considers such actions a violation of civil rights. Deadly force should only be used in defense of human life, and the situations discussed thus far, in my opinion, do not fit that criteria. Officers must be properly trained and required to take refresher training courses that will better enable them to react appropriately in life-threatening situations, as we know. We also know that as law enforcement officials, we are regularly faced with situations and decisions where our lives and the lives of others are quite literally in our hands. It is our responsibility to ensure that we are equipped with the essential knowledge to make split-second decisions while at the same time not exceeding our authority. On the other side of the excessive force issue are the recent incidents where officers in the line of duty have been killed by suspects. In Philadelphia, Officer John Kowalski was killed by 33-year-old Rasheed Scruggs when responding to a taxi robbery. Kowalski confronted Scruggs, who opened fire using a gun hidden beneath his jacket. Scruggs was wounded in the incident when other officers on the scene returned fire. In Pittsburgh, three officers were recently responding to what was described as a domestic dispute between a mother and a son with no weapons. The subject of the call, 22-year-old Richard Pawlowski, knew police had been called and waited for the officers to arrive. Armed with an AK-47 assault-style rifle, a 22 caliber rifle, and a revolver, and wearing a bulletproof vest, he shot and killed officers Eric Kelly, Stephen Miles, and Paul J. Spielman within minutes of their arrival. After a four-hour siege, during which he exchanged several rounds with SWAT, Pawlowski surrendered, and he was wounded in the leg. And here in Oakland, Officer John E. and Sergeant Mark Dunnigan were killed in the line of duty when attempting to stop a suspect. Lavelle missed on what appeared to be a routine traffic stop. After shooting, the officers Mason fled on foot, and Sergeant Irvin Romans and Sergeant Daniel Sakai were shot in SWAT attempts to apprehend the suspect. Mixon was on parole and had a warrant for his arrest. Officers on the streets are there to protect, and senseless attacks upon these officers is simply not acceptable. The increased perception that law enforcement is against the community is a perception that is exacerbated where there have been incidents of unarmed citizens being killed by police, has created an air that is acceptable to shoot police officers. These heinous acts simply must stop. There's been too many incidents across this country where officers have paid the ultimate price protecting their citizens from people that have no compunction in attacking police officers. Anyone arrested for firing at a police officer should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. Injustice anyway is a threat to justice. As law enforcement executives, we must embody this idea. We must remain committed to equipping officers with the knowledge and skills that will allow them to make the best decisions possible in the most difficult situations. We must impress upon citizens that we as law enforcement officers are there for their protection, and that any sort of violence against law enforcement is not acceptable. In closing, I submit that injustice by law enforcement officials breeds injustice. Just as Dr. King could not sit idly as injustices were occurring in Birmingham, we cannot sit idly by as tensions rise between law enforcement and communities nationwide. We're all indeed brethren in law enforcement. And what happens here in Oakland impacts me in Washington. What happens in Philadelphia impacts law enforcement in Chicago. What happens in Florida impacts those in Texas. We must root out injustice in all segments of our profession by following the adage that it's always right to do right. We can improve actions and situations nationwide by remaining committed to justice by action. Again, I say good evening.
Mr. President, that was excellent. Very well said. It is hard to come behind that, but there are awards to present people who are very, very deserving. And I'd like to bring up to present the first Community Service Award, Lieutenant to the Oakland Police Department, who is going to do a spectacular job tomorrow as the moderator for a youth town hall meeting. I know he's going to do a tremendous job. Would you please welcome Lieutenant Johnny Davis?
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that warm welcome, and I hope to do well tomorrow. Anyway, good evening all, Mr. President, Vice President, Chiefs, honored guests. I'm here to present the First Community Award to our honoree this evening. It will be going to Rashida Grenage and Pueblo, which stands for People United for Better Life and Hope. I'm extremely honored to present this award tonight, and I've had the pleasure of meeting Ms. Grenage for the first time, but I've been very familiar with her work, and I, along with Chief Jordan, recommended that she receive this award. Mr. Grenage joined People United for a Better Life in Oakland, Pueblo, in 1994 after a police-involved shooting that took the lives of her beloved husband, Raphael, and her son, Luke. Ms. Grenage earned her B.A. at Brandeis University in English and Theater Arts, and her M.A. from Hogan Daines College in Education, and her California Secondary School Teaching Credential from Hogan Daines College. She has taught middle school for over 30 years and is the proud mother of three surviving sons, Manuel, Marzuki, Hamid, Grenage. She has served as the director of Pueblo since 2005. Pueblo is a multi-ethnic, multi-use community organization with more than 300 low to moderate income member families across Oakland. Their members, leaders, and staff are people of different races, cultures, ages, genders, and sexual orientations, and income levels. By building the power of low-income people, people of color, and youth through political analysis, leadership, and organizing skills, they strive to change the institutions that affect our lives at the local, country, and regional level. Their mission is to further the struggle for racial, social, and economic justice in Oakland and in the Bay Area. Their strategies include organizing, direct action, policy research and analysis, leadership development, popular education, and coalition building. Mrs. Grenage began her career with Pueblo, learning about community organizing from Pueblo director Dan Hosen. Since then, she's done extensive research on police practices and has served on several task forces in Oakland, including the Community Policing Advisory Board, which convened in 1994. The advisory board divided Oakland into beats and established the philosophy of community policing. She served on the task force in 1996 to upgrade the function and effectiveness of the Citizens Police Review Board, also known as the CPRB. In 2000, Mrs. Grenage again served on a task force to remedy the structural flaws in the CPRB that were creating a backlog of complaints. The task force reviewing the RAND-funded study of racial profiling in Oakland, spearheaded by a former Captain Ron Davis, the task force to review the Oakland Police Department policy on high-speed pursuits, and Mayor Dellums' task force on police issues from 2007 to the present. I'd like to say that when I nominated Ms. Grenage for this award, I solely did it just for her, but she told me that she could not have done half of what she's accomplished without the help of Pueblo, and she wanted Pueblo recognized as well. So without further ado, I'd like to recognize Mrs. Rashida Grenage, if you please stand, and